This week we kick off a I think 5 week set of classes on the Eightfold Path. And so each class is going to be focused on one of the factors of the Eightfold Path. The first one tonight obviously being right view. And so in this sutta, this is the Kakkayanagata Sutta. Kakkayanagata is a monk who's asking the Buddha, how does right view relate to the world? And so you can think about the world in one of two ways, one of which is the world at large outside, right? The world. And the Buddha also referred to the world as the sixth sense base. So keep that in mind as we go through this. And it's phenomena that contact our senses through ignorance that lead to our stress and suffering. And so right view is the entry point to the Noble Eightfold Path. Right view is knowledge of the Four Noble Truths, understanding stress and the cessation of stress. In the sutta as well, the Buddha uses dependent origination to frame right view. He's also teaching against the use of extreme views or polarizing views. And so we are, as humans, conditioned to think in binary terms or polar terms, yes, no, hot, cold, like, dislike, black, white, etc. And when we attach or cling ourselves to those wrong views, suffering and stress result. And so right view is also not only the entry point, it is the culmination of the path when all phenomena are seen simply as stress arising and passing away. The Buddha's words. The Buddha was staying at Savatthi at Jiva's Grove, Anathapindika's monastery. The monk Kakkayanagata approached the Buddha with a question. I don't understand right view. Can you teach me how right view relates to the world? Kakkayana. The confusion and deluded thinking in the world arises from polarizing views. There is the view of existence and a view of non-existence. When the origination of confused and deluded thinking is understood and abandoned, from right view, it is seen that non-existence does not occur. Furthermore, when the cessation of confused and deluded thinking is understood and abandoned, from right view, it is seen that existence does not occur. And so this dichotomy of existence and non-existence is one of the stickiest ones in all of humanity and has been in perpetuity or in, and what does that really mean, right? This view that I think I exist or I don't exist, or I'll be reborn into heaven, or I'll be reborn into hell, or I'll annihilate at death. And what the Buddha is really pointing to here is anatta, or the ego. It's the ego that thinks it exists. It's the ego that thinks it's going to die. And the ego is only a perception. It's a construct of the mind. And so to question one's existence is to rationalize a figment of the imagination. In picking any other set of polarities, you can do this with anything. You will oscillate between the two poles. Right view is not polarized. Right view is seeing reality clearly as it is, unobscured by the perception of ego, not wishing or wanting anything to be different than what it is. And the Buddha continues, the world is sustained by attachments, by clinging to conditioned thinking and wrong views rooted in ignorance. One who has developed right view no longer clings to attachments or fixated thinking or self-obsession. It is understood that stress arising is stress arising. It is understood that stress passing away is stress passing away. There's no identification there. In this way, their knowledge is independent of other views. This is how right view relates to the world. And so we become entrenched with these views we have. I'm right, you're wrong. We identify with them, we claim them as our own, we obsess with them, we become enchanted by them. And if our views are grounded in ignorance, established in ignorance, stress and suffering are inevitable. Your views are dependent on the conditions for their continued existence. Once right view is developed, we drop the narratives, we drop the preferences, and we drop the judgments. They're no longer necessary. And what we see is stress arising and passing away simply as stress arising and passing away. There's no me in that. It's not dependent on any other view. It's just a, it is, or it isn't. stress is, and stress is passing away. And the Buddha continues, the view that everything exists is a wrong view, and the view that nothing exists is another wrong view. My Dhamma avoids extreme views. I teach from the middle. I teach the Eightfold Path as the middle way that avoids extreme views. And again, this is polarized thinking. I often ask people, half is the glass half empty or half full? How many people half empty? Raise your hands. Nobody? You're all, oh, thank you. There's got to be some. You're all half full people.
It's a
No?
trick.
It's a trick question. It's both. Right? We get locked into this mindset. If you step back, you see the truth for what it is, and things are happening simultaneously. The only difference is the perception. And so this next section here is the teaching on dependent origination. And again, the Buddha taught everything in the context of dependent origination. Right view is no different. And so the origination of confused and deluded thinking is found within dependent origination. It represents the detailed manufacturing of dukkha as expressed by the First Noble Truth. Dependent origination teaches that impersonal phenomena arise within the environment of impermanence, and that thinking this impersonal, impermanent phenomena is happening to you is eye-making. That's wrong view. If we interact with life through wrong view, we suffer. And ignorance isn't just the start of dependent origination. It binds all the links together. It's in the gears of all of it. And I'm not going to go into the mechanics of that tonight. I just want to, I'll read through it and we'll talk a bit about it, but I'm not going to get into each and every chain. And so the Buddha continues, the middle way shows that suffering originates and is dependent on ignorance. From ignorance as a requisite condition comes fabrications. From fabrications as a requisite condition comes consciousness. From consciousness as a requisite condition comes name and form. From name and form as a requisite condition comes the sixth sense base. From the sixth sense base as a requisite condition comes contact. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling. From feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. And from birth as a requisite condition comes aging, sickness, death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair. Such is the origination of extreme views and the entire mass of confusion, delusion, and stress. So, what the Buddha is saying here, dependent origination gives birth to wrong view if it's grounded in ignorance. And extreme and polar views are wrong view. However, if your views are framed by the Four Noble Truths and guided by the Eightfold Path, and you stick to the middle, you don't take a position, you don't get offended by right and wrong, self and other, or existence or non-existence. None of that matters. It's just stress arising and stress passing away. That's how you need to look at every moment of your life on a daily basis. In this moment, can I identify the stress? Can I see it arising? And can I see it passing away? There's no me in that. There doesn't need to be. And the Buddha continues, now, from the remainderless fading and cessation of that very ignorance comes the cessation of fabrications. From the cessation of fabrications comes the cessation of consciousness. From the cessation of consciousness comes the cessation of name and form. From the cessation of name and form comes the cessation of the sixth sense media. From the cessation of the sixth sense media comes the cessation of contact. From the cessation of contact comes the cessation of feeling. From the cessation of feeling comes the cessation of craving. From the cessation of craving comes the cessation of clinging and maintaining. From the cessation of clinging and maintaining comes the cessation of becoming. And from the cessation of becoming becomes the cessation of birth. From the cessation of birth, then aging and death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair all cease. Such is the cessation of the entire mass of stress and suffering. And so again, since ignorance permeates the entire chain, you don't have to knock it out at the beginning. You can knock it out in the middle and the whole thing unravels. If you start to understand that when I take a position, when I defend a view, when I claim a view, when I cling to a view, you're going to continue to experience stress and suffering. And so ignorance is brought to an end through the knowledge developed in right view. This is stress. This is the origination of stress. This is the cessation of stress. And this is the path of practice leading to the cessation of stress, the Four Noble Truths. Ignorance is abandoned through understanding. And so this is why right view is considered both an entry point and the culmination of the Dhamma. All I got for you tonight, my friends. All right. Go online. Mary, how are you?
Hi, good evening, everyone. Well done, Brian. Very concise, but a lot in there, of course. And it plays itself out every day when we're on our cushion, breathing in, breathing out, neither extreme, thoughts arising, thoughts passing. It's a microcosm of that. And the practice helps us to develop the muscle that allows us to recall this understanding and this knowing, and live it when we're off the cushion and we're dealing with contact and feelings arising and all sorts of worldly phenomenon. And so it really can be, while it's a big concept, dependent origination, it can also be boiled down to the very practical thing that if we're doing it twice a day on our cushion, it's not this complex thing to understand. It's a more simplified version, just like half full or half empty, right? It's neither extreme. And right view is free of all the clinging and craving, which is what we're working on our cushions to experience. So thank you for that reminder and for taking it big picture down to something very practical that we can all understand. So thank you, Brian.
Thank you. Yeah, and there's again, there's no judgment on the view per se. It's the clinging to it, craving for it, right? It's not the view in and of itself. So you teased that out for me. Thank you. Raquel, how are you?
Hi, Brian. Thank you so much for the teaching. Like Mary said very well there, that's there is a lot in this to unpack and to learn and to practice. And I'm just still thinking about all of this, and it's so important to reflect on all of this, not while we I'm here doing this meditation sessions, but throughout our life. But I'm every day I'm learning. Every day is an opportunity, every minute to restart again and to learn from all of this, from all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, you really just have to keep going. Don't get overwhelmed and don't overthink it. Just keep showing up and show up
Yeah.
for yourself. You'll get there.
Thank you.
Jane, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for the teaching, Brian. You put a lot in there. I like when you said right view is both the entry point and the culmination of the Dhamma. Hadn't really thought about it like that, and it is. So thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll go around the room. I can't, somebody talk so the screen gets bigger for me. I see Kevin right in the middle.
Thank you, Brian. Great teaching. I had not much to say. I liked what you said in the beginning, or you made reference to what is the Buddha referring to with regards to the world, and we kind of been flushing that out. The world is our conditioned thinking, and our views, our judgments, etc., that we place on things. And that's what the Buddha is trying to get us to notice here. I also liked how you said, you know, dependent origination is the detailed manufacturing of dukkha. That was really cool. I liked that. So yes, you know, as you continue to practice, you will see yourself in action. You will see yourself placing conditioned views on worldly phenomenon. And as we've said, it's best to notice those, let them arise and let them pass away, and keep on going. So thank you.
That's right. There's a band, something about keep on trucking, right? I think that's about
a good one.
That's what they're talking about. Julia in the back corner. Hi.
I'll take,
well, you're okay. Kind of both in the corner, but yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Brian. That was a great teaching for me as well. I don't know. Have we done this teaching before? This sutta isn't familiar to me. We have. Okay. Right. But I just really appreciated the link between right view and how it tells the whole story of dependent origination, which is something someone already said. So thank you. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Tracy, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you, Brian, for the teaching. It was actually really interesting timing for this one, because I was in meditation just now and I kind of struggling through it for most of it, trying to get it right, you know. And I got to this point at the very end of the meditation where I kind of realized, like, that this pain that I'm feeling is not my pain. It's just pain. And it's everybody's pain. And your teaching on right view, it really helped me to understand, oh, this is just stupid. Like, it's one thing to hear the teaching and be told the teaching, but then to really experience in the meditation that reality is completely different. So, yeah very interesting. Thank you.
You bring up a great point, right? I can talk till I'm blue in the face. I won't, because I don't like talking that much. But it doesn't matter how much I say, right? Like, you all respectively have to sit and practice and go through the experience. That's where it becomes meaningful. So, thank you. Glad you're here. Zach, how are you?
Good, how you doing?
Good.
The teaching. I don't remember this sutta either. It's my first turn through this one specifically, but more broadly, Brian, I'd love to hear your perspective on, John used to always say consciousness in parentheses rooted in ignorance. How do you define, or how would you define consciousness in this context?
In the context of dependent origination?
Yep.
Or in the context of right view, or all the above?
All the above.
Well, for me personally, and this will probably spawn quite a debate, I think of it from a Buddhist perspective just as awareness. So there's an object, and I become aware of the object. I am conscious of the object. And so if you put that into dependent origination, consciousness comes after, I think, name and form, or before name and form. So I become conscious of my fabrications, and then I'm off to the races. So for me, it's kind of the glue that just binds all of that together. I don't get into personally thinking about altered higher levels of consciousness or dimensions. It's not really meaningful from a Dhamma standpoint. So when you get into some of the suttas where there's, you know, ear consciousness, eye consciousness, nose consciousness, right? That makes more sense if you substitute consciousness with awareness, right? Because you're never going to be unconscious. You're not going to get rid of your consciousness. You're just going to detach the clinging to the awareness of the thing that you're experiencing at the senses. Does it make sense?
Just know it's impermanent here. It's always evolving, always to identify and attach to my consciousness is suffering. it's not sustainable, not stable. So this thing that we see as our consciousness is impermanent.
Thanks, Zach. Always keep me on my toes. Appreciate you. Is that Brett?
It is, yes.
How are you, man? Good to see you.
Good. Thanks for your teaching, Brad. So definitely with relationships, you know, wanting them to be different, work relationships continuously. They're there every day with guys at work, you know, wanting them maybe to take on my views all the time. And so that's, it was good to hear this sutta because it's, you know, when that stuff comes up, I don't, you know, it's, I forget what you were saying. It's just watching it come up and, you know, wanting it to be different than it is. It's something that, it's a good reminder to see that and hear that, because it's something that, you know, I haven't really touched on in a while with what's going on and, or just with life. And it's, you know, taking the middle road, the middle ground, like you were saying, and not letting either side kind of get, you know, in the way. And you know, just watching when phenomena comes up, and is it happening to me? Is it just happening? And that's another thing. You know, the suffering is coming up with different relationships or whatever. Anything. What is happening? And, you know, is it just something going on in my head? And so being able to come back to your breath and just seeing that, you know, what it is. So good to be here. Thanks for your teaching.
Yeah, glad you're here. Good to see you.
You too.
Laura, how are you?
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I really liked how you said, you used the word like clinging and craving and claiming. Like that's something that I do a lot with my reaction to worldly phenomenon rather than letting it go, or a view of some sort. You know, oh, I'm going to claim it as my property or cling to it. And so that really resonated with me when you said that, because now I can kind of observe where I'm not letting go of, you know, those things which are causing me suffering. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Julia.
Thank you, Brian, for the teaching. I'm going to take noble silence.
Appreciate you being here. Who's got Lazy Susan duties today?
I'm on it.
There you go.
All right. It's better than me.
I didn't remember that. We have an engineering problem.
Michael, how are you?
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
A really good lecture, man. That was really good. I enjoyed that. Learned a lot from it. I'll just give my way I see things. Right view to me is noticing the ego in the present moment and abandoning the ego in the present moment. Because I first have to understand my contribution to my ignorance and my contribution to my own pain and suffering. So identifying the ego in the present moment is not a simple thing to do, okay? Sometimes we don't even recognize our ignorance in the present moment. Okay? That's the way I see it. So, again, now, when recognizing the ego in the present moment, it is not a simple task. Okay? It takes right effort, constantly, no matter what it is that occurs. We're being aware of being self-referential or not being self-referential. And so when I'm not self-referential, I'm abandoning the ego in the present moment, because I always have a choice in the present moment. I can choose the ego, or I can choose to be non-self-referential. That is, to me, what is the is what keeps us in the present moment, the constant vigilant attention we pay to those decisions that occur in the present moment. And when we can stay centered there, the middle way, when we can stay centered there, all possibilities are capable of occurring, okay? And when those all possibilities means all the possibilities, it means pain and suffering, and it also means all the things that are glorious that we can see. So all these possibilities are possible. So this is what, this takes work for me. I'm speaking for myself now. This takes a lot of work and my diligence to the past and the recognition of that ego self as it arises and not identifying it. So that's what creates a little space in my mind so that I'm clearing my mind of attachments, where the Hatfields and McCoys can be shooting across the, I'll be going down the river, and the Hatfields and McCoys could be shooting, having a firefight across the water. And I just sail down that river and know that I'm in right view because I'm not identifying with either one of them. So that's what.
Yeah, that's great. I think another way to say that is that right view is understanding the origination of stress and the cessation of stress, which is the three marks of existence, right? Anatta, clinging to impermanent phenomena, is stress. And so your point, to pull that back to what you just said, like the ego in the moment, oscillating between, that is stress or not stress.
That's right.
Thank you. David, how are you, my friend?
Good, Brian. Thank you for your teaching. I'm on.
Matt or Rom wants to go last. No. Hi.
He's the lazy Susan.
Hey, Brian. So this sort of applies both the Four Noble Truth and, in a more granular way, dependent origination to the world, to see right view, or to apply right view as you are in the world. And in both of those ways, at any moment, applying either one of the Four Noble Truths or any of dependent origination gives you that shot at unraveling the clinging that you have already. It makes it a little less daunting.
That's right.
It just gives you, actually, it does give you a lot of choice in being in the world. You know, whenever a situation gives rise to stress in you, you know, pick your poison. You know, where do you want to go? What do you want to apply here to get you to a resolution?
Restraint.
Thank you.
That's my answer.
Many, many tools in the toolbox for sure. Thank you. Matt, are you? Hi.
Thank you for the tips. That was excellent. I'm good.
All right. Anybody else have any questions, comments?
What is this in any of the books that you
asked? Just going through website. Yeah, it lays out the whole series.
And is it in Becoming Buddha?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It gives all the classes.
Did you pick it out of the last retreat book?
Or what's that? The Sutta? Yeah,
this particular Sutta.
Honestly, I was searching Becoming Buddha, looking for content around right view.
Okay.
And this popped up. No, secret sauce. So. Quite frankly, is what we did for the rest of them, was to find suttas that matched up with each of the factor of the Eightfold Path. So next, I guess Saturday will be around right intention, which I think is one of the Buddha's teachings to his son Rahula, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will do a little meta as we do. So find your meditation posture and let your breath unite your mind and your body. And these are the Buddha's words on metta. This is what is done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. They are able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. They remain unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. They are peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. They do not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. They are always mindful that all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, they are always mindful to not deceive another or despise any being in any state. They abandon anger and ill will with ease, never wishing harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart the wise disciple cherishes all living beings. They radiate kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, they maintain refined mindfulness. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, having completed the path, does not give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths. Thank you, my friends.
Thank you.
David or Matt, did you guys want to make announcements about May?
Yeah. Saturday, May 4th, we're going to have our memorial for John. We're going to have class here, as we always do. Then we'll probably head down to the river for a minute and then make our way to the park over here, weather permitting. If it's crappy, then we'll probably just stay here and hang out.
It may also depend on how high the river is. You were thinking of it.
That's true.
Skipping out into the middle of the river.
That's true. If the big rocks are open out there, then we'll go down there. If they're not, then we won't. But either way, May 4th here. If it's nice, we'll go to the park after and remember our friend. And we'll probably have snacks or something at Bridge Cafe. Let's just do that so we don't get too involved with everybody bringing food and stuff. And we'll just utilize the good resources we have in town. Usually, you know, I don't know if Brian's teaching that day, but usually we end at 10, maybe around on Saturdays, you know, not 9:15 if Brian's teaching. but
brevity,
yeah,
brevity is a superpower. Thank you,
brevity for the win.
That's right.
I think it's Tom.
Okay, cool. So I think class will end about 10. River permitting, we'll head down to the river. After that, we should end up in the park by 11:30. And I think people, you know, we'll probably hang out there for a while. So we'll be at the park at noon for sure. Awesome. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Brian.
Thank you, Brian.
Bye. Good night.